We're ready when you are, Counsel.
Okay, thank you. May it please the Court, my name is Claire Michelson, and I represent Mr. Donald Eskridge, the appellant in this case, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes of rebuttal, if I may. Your Honor, we're here on a fairly simple topic for a domestic relations case. We have one issue on appeal, and that issue is whether or not the trial court abused his discretion by awarding the wife spousal support in a case where there was no evidence presented of the wife's need for support. The facts in the case were that the husband submitted evidence of his income. His income and expense statement was pre-submitted with the court. The wife presented evidence of her income, or evidence was presented of her income. There was some evidence that she had received some temporary support, and that was being paid without prejudice to the case. There was testimony by her that she could hardly make ends meet, and then there was some testimony by her that she needed support, and that was all of the evidence before the court. The case law in Virginia is very clear that the burden is on the person seeking support to provide evidence of their need for support. Virginia Code Section 20-107.1 specifically lists factors that are required for the court to consider in awarding support, and the very first factor are the financial needs and resources of the parties. So in order for the court to award some amount of support, they have to have some idea of what that amount is. They can't just take a pie-in-the-sky number and throw it in there. Unfortunately, in this case, that's what happened. It was pointed out to the trial judge at the beginning that that there were, initially when the decree of divorce was entered, it was done by the court without a letter to counsel or any opinion letter of any sort, and we just received an order in the mail, and it had in there the support was awarded, and none of the factors were listed. There was nothing stated by the judge of why he even awarded the support or what he considered in his decision. So we noted our objections to that decision, and then he revised it and filed an amended order where he listed some of the factors, and even then he never mentioned the wife's need for support. There's not any listing at all of her need. They just simply list some other factors that are part of the statute that are to be considered, but there was no mention of that.
Well, why isn't the disparity in the income that was in the record and her statement that she could barely make ends meet, why wouldn't that be enough?
Because the court needs to rely on a number. The case law in Virginia is pretty clear on that as well. We have two cases that are specifically on point. One is the case of Robbins that was decided in 2006, where the court specifically stated that you need to have evidence of the wife's need. In that case, it's a little distinguishable from this one because the issue there was the wife had presented evidence of her expenses combined with her children's. And the court said it was error for the trial judge to award support to her based on that combination. But they also held in that case that you have to have some evidence of what her needs are, not just what the whole family's needs are. And then later in 2010, this court also decided Andrews versus Creasy, where the court stated specifically that where there's no offer of evidence of medical expenses or housing expenses or food expenses, something for the court to consider, there's no way for them to know what the basis for the amount of support is. And it is a factor that's required. And there's been the court has actually had even some unpublished decisions made after that continue with that understanding that there has to be evidence of necessity. Otherwise, there's no way, the court could have awarded her $5,000 a month or any number, and it wouldn't have made any sense unless the court had some basis, some evidence to look at to consider in making its award. And so we're asking here that the court, that this court reverse the trial court's ruling on this based on the fact that there was no evidence to support the ruling, and the court had a chance to fix it and still did not state the trial judge did not say that he had received any evidence that supported his ruling other than some of these other factors. But they are required by Virginia case law and the statute to specifically consider, they have to consider all of the factors, and the first one is the resources of the parties and the needs of the person seeking support. And I will note that there was in the appellee's brief, he had stated that or indicated that somehow it might have been the husband's burden to prove that she didn't need support, but the burden initially is on her to prove that she needs it, and then he can rebut that evidence. She was the one seeking support. She was the plaintiff in the case. She never presented any evidence of what those numbers were, and it certainly wasn't the burden on him as the defendant to come in and disprove something that was never offered into evidence in the first place. But that's not what the law is, and it's Robin specifically states that the evidence is, the burden is on the wife to make that, or the person seeking support to make that request. So we're asking that this court reverse the decision of the trial court based on lack of evidence. And there are two, the court can do it, there's two things you can consider. One is you can reverse it if it's plainly wrong or without evidence to support it under the Northcutt case, which the court can do here. But even if this, the court considers the factors, if there's an abuse of discretion, it can also be reversed. And I think both of these apply, but I think we meet the first criteria of the fact that there was no evidence to support the judge's decision.
If I recall correctly, your assignment of error is expressed as an abuse of discretion standard solely, isn't it?
Well, yes. Well, actually, in the argument we have in the front, we put both of them on there. We have stated in that the law is the first one is under the Northcutt case that it's you can reverse it if it's plainly wrong without evidence to support it, or if the factors are considered. In this case, the judge did list some factors. So if the court wants to consider that, you don't have to, it is true that you don't have to state the weight that's given to each and every factor, but just that they're all considered. And in that case, you would use the abuse of discretion standard.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brown?
If it pleases the judge of this court, I'm Reginald Barley, and I represent Angela Eskridge. There, as Ms. Mitchelson has indicated, there is only one issue in this case, and that is the want of the need and ability of the defendant, husband, to pay support in this case. First of all, I want to point out that this court clearly stated in Robbins versus Robbins that the code section 20-107.1E1 does not require a mathematical formula. It only requires that the trial court consider an estimate of the needs. Now, in this particular case, we did not have a transcript. The statement of facts in this case are more or less bullet points of what the evidence was, but both parties testified in this case. The trial judge had an opportunity to hear all of the testimony and the demeanor of the witnesses in this particular case. Based on those factors, at least that kind of evidence, and clearly quoted testimony from the wife that she needed spousal support, that she could hardly make ends meet. She testified that she was receiving $500 initially, and then at least finally, and then started out at $750. Clearly, an inference from that is that with her income from her job and with the spousal support that she was receiving temporarily from her husband, that she could hardly make ends meet. And so that burden was carried. The trial judge here meticulously went through each code section, including 20107.1E1, which indicates the needs and financial abilities of the parties. And I think that reasonably he could conclude that that she could not make ends meet as far as paying for housing, educational utilities, things of that sort.
Based on the evidence that was received, how did the judge make the movement from cannot make ends meet to $1,200 per month?
Well, Judge, I think it's very easy on that he could have, and there were arguments by counsel on this case as to what they thought that the judge should award the plaintiff in this case. And so in this particular case, arguments were made by counsel for the wife and arguments from the husband. And it appears that the judge selected something just about at a midpoint of argument that were made by the parties.
But how do we know that? How do we know what the parties argued in terms of amount? Because I don't see that in the statement of facts.
We do not know. In the statement of facts.
Yeah, that's correct. And that's what we have to rely upon.
Yes, ma'am.
So to answer Judge Huff's question, how did the trial judge jump from the concept of need? I can hardly make ends meet to the amount that he awarded.
Based on the income of the husband in this case. And if we look at the income of the husband in this case, he made more than twice as much as the wife. He was, if you look at his pay stubs, and that becomes critically important in this case, the husband was saving over $2,000 per month.
But how does that address her need?
It addresses her...
It might address his ability to pay.
That's only one factor. Need is a factor.
Yes. What is the need?
The exact need
is... on this record.
On this record, the exact need is not in the record. I will tell you that.
Okay.
But the court is required to estimate the needs of the parties, as you all stated in Robbins versus Robbins, based on the income that she had and the ability of the husband to pay. I think that if you look at the code in this case, the code does not require that the judge, the trial judge that is, consider only that one factor. It's one of numerous factors, and he clearly went down those factors and say, this is what is needed, and that's exactly what the code requires be done in a spousal support case. So,
thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Rebuttal?
Your Honor, I would state with regard to the hardly make ends meet, it is a matter of semantics, but the fact was saying that she could hardly make ends meet meant she could make ends meet because she made them meet. Hardly means that she actually made ends meet. She didn't say, I didn't make them meet. She said she hardly made them meet. But
counsel, to the extent that the record is deficient here in our ability to see what the witnesses may have said that gave the judge the ability to go from can hardly make ends meet to $1,200. Isn't it your burden to provide a record to the court that we can make a determination on?
Well, Your Honor, we have provided the record, and we had a hearing with the judge to put the written statements of facts together, and we all agreed on what they were and signed them at the hearing, and the judge signed it. And nowhere at that hearing was there any evidence of her need, and I think the appellee is acknowledging there was no evidence of her need other than those particular statements, and there was some closing argument of counsel asking for things, but the evidence itself, that's not evidence. There was
but
no
the
evidence.
Arguments of counsel, which arguably may have been a basis for the trial court's resolution of the evidence, is not a part of the statement of facts, is it?
It is not, because it was not in evidence. I think the
statement of facts is not just the evidence; it's the totality
of the
proceedings.
Case.
Correct. The
correct,
same thing that a transcript would give us.
Yes, Your Honor. And so we discussed what we would put in there, and what we agreed upon is exactly what is in there. And I do believe, you know, it was pointed out to the judge in the objections that the factors were not enumerated, and he did not give a basis for how he came up with his decision, and so he amended his order and listed all kinds of factors and things that were in evidence, and still there was nothing in the evidence about the fact that she needed money for anything specific. That just wasn't there, and he had the opportunity to fix that based on his notes and what he believed to be in the record, and he did not do that.
Was there an objection filed to that final version of the order?
The objection was noted to the first one, and he made the corrections, and then a motion for reconsideration was filed. But he was already given the opportunity to fix the objection, and he didn't do it even when he amended the order. So it was properly noted the first time. Thank you.
Thank you. We will come down and greet counsel and then